It's Gavin Gray with the UK Report. Morning, Gavin.
Hi there, Sarah Jane.
Hi. Oh, gosh. I mean, listen, it's been grim news-wise here. We're waiting on more information for a developing story here where 17 people have bizarrely been found dead at a tavern in a place called East London here. We're still trying to wait for details from our end. And your first couple of stories are also rather grim.
I'm afraid so, yes. Let's start off in continental Europe and in Oslo, so the capital of Norway, where just a few hours before a popular pride event, in other words, an event attended by lots of people supporting those who are gay and also, of course, gay people themselves, a 42-year-old man has been arrested and charged after it's alleged he walked into a popular gay bar in Oslo and began shooting. Eyewitnesses say he actually took his time, was aiming, not indiscriminately, aiming at the individual people at their heads. Two died, 21 are wounded, some very seriously wounded, in what police are now saying is an act of Islamist terrorism. It's reported, but not confirmed, that the man arrested, as I said, 42, is an Iranian-Norwegian. And evidently, they are linking it to the Pride March. He did actually go to three different venues and shoot, but 21 injured in total, as I mentioned, 10 in a serious condition. And the terror alert in Norway, which really hasn't seen a huge amount of terrorism, has now been raised to its highest level, though the country's intelligence service, the PST, says it currently has no indication that further attacks are likely. But obviously, as you can imagine, the Pride event there has now been cancelled. People are saying they will still, you know, attempt to hold it. They will still not be silent and not hide. But this is very, very worrying for the communities there and indeed those that support the gay community. So I'm afraid the first of the two stories, they're really, really depressing, as is the second one, where in North Africa, some people from Morocco, migrants, tried to storm an enclave of Spain set in North Africa. It's called Maia, and it said hundreds of people tried to storm in. And now we know that 23 had died, many dozens injured. Of course, what they were trying to do is to effectively get into Europe. And there is this really pretty small enclave in North Africa called Maia. Spain has another one indeed, actually, called Ceuta. And both Maria and Ceuta have both, in recent years, pretty much become a focal point for sub-Saharan migrants attempting to reach Europe. But this mass attempt to sort of break in is the first such noted by these two enclaves. And I'm afraid it appears many of those that died either fell or jumped from a very high wall as they attempted to get past security personnel.
Terribly, terribly sad. Tell us, what's the latest on this standoff between the European Union and Russia? Of course, the invasion of Ukraine having a big impact on all sorts, including, of course, gas and petrol prices, etc.
Well, Russia stands on the brink of its first default in world international trade repayments, interest repayments. It's got the money, but the money is stuck in a transfer bank because of sanctions, it's being reported. And this would be its first ever default in this millennia. So since 1998 was the last time. It's not particularly damaging to their economy. They do have the money, but it's very damaging to their international reputation and something they've been working really hard these last few days to avoid. But today is the deadline, and it doesn't look like the money is moving very fast. Of course, Russia gets a lot of its income from oil and gas exports, and it's gas that I now want to concentrate on, because in Germany, they have now triggered an alarm stage of an emergency gas plan, and that could mean they are now coming closer and closer to the rationing of gas. And, of course, that is because Russia is turning the tap off, because it is insisting that Europe pays in rubles to prop up its currency. The European Union is refusing to do that, saying, our contract with you clearly states we're going to pay in either US dollar or EU euros. And there is this big standoff now. And I'm afraid to say that things in Germany, particularly crucial, A, because they are so reliant on Russian gas, and B, because, of course, they're still a very large manufacturing nation requiring gas for those manufacturing processes. So the government in Germany has moved to the second stage of its three-part emergency plan, and that's triggered when there's disruption in the service or high demand for gas. And the government is going to provide, the government in Germany is providing loans of some 260 billion South African rand to try and fill gas storage facilities now, because, of course, we're in our summer, so heating supplies aren't being tapped much. But, of course, we're all looking ahead to those winter months thinking, am I not going to be able to heat my house? Is the gas going to be turned off? So make no mistake, this is pretty serious. And now 12 European Union countries have been affected by cuts to gas supply from Russia. Russia has cut its supply through the Nord Stream 1 pipeline, which is the big pipeline connecting the EU and Germany for gas. EU, Russia, we guess, and it's down to just 40% of its capacity.
Sure. It's 9:14, folks. We are talking to Gavin Gray. He joins us every Sunday morning just after 9 o'clock to give us the latest news, the stories making headlines in the UK and Europe. Last week, Gavin, you told us about the tube strikes which were imminent. What's the latest there?
I'm afraid more on the way, and this really more to do with the overall overground train strikes.
Which right.
Saw very few services in Scotland and Wales, absolutely outside of London, services were just skeleton, I'm afraid. And now the union is saying, well, it's extremely likely now there will be more. Talks continue to fail. The unions want the government to get involved and accusing the government of actually blocking a deal. The government says, look, it's not to do with us. These are individual train operating companies. They're companies. We can't storm in and say this and that. But the government can talk to those in the infrastructure sectors, because it is the rail infrastructure sectors as well where there's a row about pay, conditions, pensions, and compulsory redundancies. And the union is saying it's the government that should get involved. It's also not a particularly nice hiding place for the opposition party, Labour, because they are largely funded by union fees. Labour, the leader, is basically saying, yes, let's blame the government. But he's refused to support the strikes unconditionally as well. And indeed, he threatened all his own MPs with action if they attended a picket line. And guess what? It's estimated two or three dozen of them did and posted pictures of themselves on the picket lines on social media. We have yet to find out what the leader of the Labour Party is going to impose on a sanction here. But I'm afraid you can see these strikes continuing. And if you thought that was bad, Sarah Jane, hold on to your hat, because the teachers are threatening to go on strike. Heathrow Airport, British Airways workers have voted to go on strike. Postal workers threatening to go on strike. Council workers threatening to go on strike. They're all saying inflation is 10%. We want 10% pay rise, or roughly that. The government is continually seeming to offer much lower, 3 or 4%. And individual companies like British Airways, like Rolls-Royce, in trouble trying to convince their workers that the offer is reasonable and generous.
Have I woken up in the 1980s?
What? Yeah.
It's just extraordinary. You're going to start telling me that British Telecom are back now and they're striking too. Extraordinary. Listen, when Brexit sort of began and all the ums and ahs and backs and forth, we were concerned about commerce. We were concerned about trade, Gavin. We were concerned about the pound, the euro. What we weren't necessarily concerned about was pigeon racing.
Yes. So for the uninitiated, pigeon racing is very popular, particularly in the north of England here,
yeah.
Where you effectively take your birds to a distant place, release them at a set time, and then see who comes back first. Yes, it's an odd sport, but some of the birds individually are worth many tens of thousands of pounds.
No, they're not. Sport. Tens of
yes,
thousands,
indeed.
Gavin.
Indeed. But, and this is the big but, They used to release them in France and let them fly back across. Right. However, because these are termed to be sort of kept animals, as it were, they need a signed export health certificate.
Sure.
I mean, isn't this hilarious? They're just flying, but they need an export health certificate because that's where effectively they are being dropped off. And those pigeon fanciers, the name given to those who do the pigeon racing, say, well, that is going to cost a lot of time, effort and money, and it's simply not making it worth it. So they're saying now that the pigeon racing, the pigeon fancying won't be conducted with anything to do with the EU. And they're saying it's going to really spoil their sport. As you said, Sarah Jane, I think most people were rather more worried about any hit to the economy than about one or two pigeons. But I did love this story as a way of showing how Brexit has thrown up some rather unusual difficulties and how some in the UK are saying that the EU is far too strict in its interpretation of the deal.
And also the eccentricity of Northerners, which we won't go into. I love that. That's mad. One of my favourite stories, or one of my favourite subjects at school was history. And one of my favourite things I remember learning about was the eruption of Mount Vesuvius and Pompeii. And it blew my mind. I was absolutely fascinated by it. It turns out now that archaeologists who have been studying that area have made a very unusual find.
Yes, perhaps one of the most unusual that I've ever found. Now, bearing in mind that the eruption was 79 AD, they have found the remains of a pregnant tortoise and her egg. And it's in remarkable condition. You can clearly see it is a tortoise. The egg's a bit smacked up, but you can clearly see it's an egg still. The tortoise was apparently sheltering beneath an already destroyed building when the volcanic disaster struck. And the Pompeii area actually had an early earthquake, 62 AD. And it was in that area where they hadn't completely rebuilt by the second earthquake, 79 AD, that the tortoise was discovered. So we're talking just under 2,000 years ago, and a 14-centimeter tortoise that has lain undiscovered in a tiny underground lair between a shop destroyed in the earlier quake. Experts say the fact that it was found with an egg suggests that it was killed while trying to find somewhere peaceful to lay its offspring. And isn't that terribly sad? But as you said, it's a fascinating part of history. Mm. And to find something so well preserved is truly amazing. But yes, the poor tortoise trying to find somewhere safe then gets into trouble with the eruption of Mount Vesuvius 2,000 years ago.
Unbelievable. Folks, if you want to see a picture, just type in. I just typed in Pompeii Vesuvius and did a news search. It's, as Gavin says, it's extraordinary. It's sort of untouched. It just is. It's extremely odd. Your final story, Gavin, gives me the heebie-jeebies. It makes me so anxious. It's the kind of thing that I'd do. And then, or you know, sort of losing a lottery ticket or something and then discovering that you had the winning numbers. What's happened? I was talking about vinyl records earlier in the show. I can't even remember why. What's happened to this poor old dear and her vinyl records?
Well, a married couple, but a woman in particular, inherited a number of vinyl albums from her relatives. And the woman was moving house. So she said to another relative, look, I haven't had time to go through all the vinyl that I was given, but there are some 16 vinyl records here. They're all sentimental. They are 1960s to 70s, from the Rolling Stones, the Beatles, David Bowie, AC/DC, The Clash, The Who, and they're all first press. So in other words, like first edition for books, they are worth quite a bit of money now, these albums, you know, hundreds of pounds, so thousands of South African rand. And they were left to her by her uncle. And now her uncle died, as I said, left them to her. She then moves house, giving some of her possessions, including the album, to a relative. And the relative confuses her albums that she wants to clear out with the cutter with these albums. And consequently, she accidentally takes them to a car boot sale, and a man bought them all for £15.50. Somewhere along the sort of 300 rand mark. And then, of course, she gets out and says, have you got my box of albums? Yes, here they are. No, those aren't mine. Oh, no, you're right. They're mine.
No.
Meaning, I must have sold yours. Now, she's put out an appeal on Facebook. She's desperately hoping somebody's going to get back in touch. She said she would gladly buy them from the car boot purchaser and give them his money back. But I have to say, when you find these things, I should think just one of those albums would be more than the purchase price of all of them several times over. And it is more, I think, as well, the sentimental reasons. I don't know about you. I've still got my vinyl. I hardly ever play it, but I know where it is and I know what's in it.
I don't think I've got any vinyl. That was not quite my generation, I'm afraid, Gavin. The old,
Make me feel old. The old
vinyl, not quite. Not, I tell a lie, actually. I don't think I ever bought one, but certainly they. I remember my dad. We're talking about eccentricities of Northerners. My dad had a very bizarre collection of vinyl records, and one that I remember that he used to put on for us at Christmas, which had such hits as Agadoo.
Push pineapple, shake a tree.
Absolutely. The very same. And also, I seem to have memories of Chaz and Dave doing the rounds as well. So, I mean, that's.
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, gosh. Well, look, Sarah Jane, for goodness sake, are they with your mum still?
Well, this is the question.
You really should keep them.
I know, right? She probably flogged them at a car boot. Listen, my mum's really savvy. I tell you what, I just will quickly say this. My mum is very into antiques and she knows her kind of thing. And she also, again, the eccentricities of Brits, she loves a car boot sale. And I remember some of my sort of being dragged along as a teenager at the crack of dawn to go to, we lived in Lingfield, in Lingfield Racecourse, and they would have a car boot sale there. And we'd go round and I could see my mum eyeing. And often people don't know what they've got. My mum knew what they had. Listen, I'm not going to go any further because I don't want to incriminate her. Gavin, lovely to have you. We'll chat again next week.
Have a great weekend.
You too, Gigi. Thanks very much indeed.